everybody to the meeting tonight, and even though we've had spring, we're glad that everybody made the dedication to get here, and we appreciate everyone's attendance. So we'd like to start off with a roll call, please.
Commissioner Sinapa?
Not here.
Commissioner Christopher?
Not here.
Commissioner Geary?
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn?
Here.
Commissioner Taggart?
Here.
And Supervisor Price.
For the record, do we have excused absences for the other two board members?
We do for Christopher. I'm not sure about Neil.
I don't know how you define
it. I was just going to ask.
Excuse.
They have to call and notify.
They both notified
me. They did. Good.
About an hour ago.
And just for the record, once there's a chair, that's who they contact, or do they always contact you?
They typically, I don't know what the actual process is, but they contact me and usually tell me.
Okay, moving right along. The consent agenda is done, so that's good. Public presentations, I'll just read this again.
You missed B, approval summary.
Oh, yes, that's right. Okay. And I did read every word of it. It's excellent, I thought. I need a motion to accept.
I make a motion.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. All right. Public presentations, this matter of the meeting, this portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter, not on this agenda, but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. Speakers are limited to 2 minutes. By the way, everybody, please put their phones on silent or off. And the acoustics are not real good in this room, so any other chatter that's going on is kind of messes up. So just try to stay on this, and I think it's going to be a short night the way it looks. So public presentations, first row. Yes, ma'am.
Michelle Blaybooks, 93311. I'm here on behalf of a few rescue people who've asked me to ask you if you could or would be willing, if there's a way to permanently put something on the agenda, like a rescue report, so that they can bring rescue versus animal concerns when it involves shelter stuff, so they wouldn't use their 2 minutes as a citizen or have to choose whether to talk about rescue stuff or a different matter for their 2 minutes. Is there any way?
It would depend on what rescue probably you're talking about. It has to be a certain criteria. I mean, like with Petco, when we had them on there, it was about Petco and about
right.
what they did and things that they were...
No, I'm sure it would be what the rescue, their own stuff.
Yeah.
But a rescue wanting to talk 2 minutes about their rescue stuff is different than an individual. So it's just, I mean, is what I'm saying even making sense?
It does make sense. I don't think that's not a question for us if that's the commission to decide.
The thing of it is, if there's a certain rescue that wants to report on a regular basis, mm-hmm. let them come here and report on a regular basis mm-hmm. from the podium. And then if we see that it's a real pattern and they really need it, then I don't see a problem. I really don't. Just like with Petco, I mean, I was really interested in what they had to say.
Right.
And there was a lot going on and brought a lot of excitement and discussion to the group, like the dog tag thing and whatnot. That's probably my opinion.
She'll pass. But it's necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I got it.
Beautiful.
Cool, thanks.
Thanks very much. Susan. Whoa.
Susan Richardson, 93306. Just a couple things. One thing I'd like to say, and actually kind of thanks to Danny, and I posted and said this is for him. Found a husky in my neighborhood one day, had a license tag, a rabies tag, and the people's name and phone number and address on it, and I was able to return that dog within about 5 minutes, and it was great. So they do work when people have them on them.
I believe
it's wonderful.
Yes.
My other concern is, and I don't know, maybe commission needs to talk to their respective representatives about is the, I guess, lack thereof the medical kennels at the county house. I know, you know, they get a lot of sick dogs in there. I'm doing a 62-pound pit right now so it wouldn't get put down because it has basically kennel cough.
So what are you saying? Is it?
Well, I know they own, I think they still have 15 kennels.
Are you talking about like isolation kennels?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's 15 isolation kennels, yes.
Yeah. My concern is that's not enough. Either that or Bakersfield College students need to go back and say they need some more fosters because it's going to affect the no-kill. I mean, because I don't know how many that they have, and you can probably answer how many foster they have that would take sick dogs into their house. I know I'm the only one that will do ring.
Right.
But something else has to happen because, I mean, what if they got 5 dogs in their head ring one? I'd be dizzy.
How often is the isolation full?
All the time.
All the time.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a need that really... I mean, it really needs to be addressed because they need more. They really need more because I'm not going to be in this place forever, okay?
is there room for more?
Not at the current facility, no.
Not at the current.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, by the way, anybody from BC here? Please raise your hand.
College.
No, you got to open identify yourself. I'm just kidding. But we're glad you're here. Second row. Third row. Okay. You look familiar.
Greetings all. Janice Anderson, 93307. And I just wanted to remind everybody that we are collecting funds for the AKC disaster relief trailers that we have been awarded grants towards. We've started a kickoff. We've got the PSA on the Facebook pages. We've got brochures in the back. We've got a donors page. And we've got approximately $2,000 on hand at AKC so far, and that's without pushing. And most of that has been generated by DOTC as one of the sponsors. It's their obligation, as is Kern County Kennel Club. And once they hit the 2,000 mark, then their name can go on the trailer as one of the sponsors. So they've pretty much hit that mark, and they're continuing. So I just wanted to remind everybody, we've kind of dodged a bullet for this fire season, thank God. We did have the earthquakes out in Ridgecrest. And, you know, potentially we could be looking at floods if we get too much rain. So we want to be prepared. We want to have these trailers available in our mountainous communities so that when things happen, we're able to deal with the animals in those areas in a much more productive fashion. So please pick up the flyers back there. And also, I'm talking to ROP to do another PSA that's more current that will include Ridgecrest. Yes, I'm going to put you in there again. Mm-hmm. We'll get incorporate the earthquake and some of the more recent things that have happened. And so if we can get a couple of these, it's not costing us anything to have them made. It's a project for the ROP kids in the TV admin program. And get the word out.
Besides AKC, what Facebook pages is it on?
It's on the county. I put it on my business page. I've passed it out to some other people. I linked it to AKC. I think they're going to be putting it up on their website as well.
Okay, and the approximate costs to get... one.
Each trailer is $24,000. AKC has given us a grant for $10,000 per trailer. And so we need to raise $12,000 per trailer.
And what's the time limit on having this happen?
We can do it as quickly or as long as it takes. The money will sit there until we reach our goals. Hopefully we'll do it sooner rather than later. We've created some letters that are going to go out for sponsorship, you know, that we're going to be mailing out to businesses and individuals within the community that are known to, you know, assist in fundraising needs.
Okay. We've got some good people here. Could you give a quick example of some of the things that are on the disaster trigger?
It's chock full. It can facilitate approximately 74 or 75 animals. Okay. It has crates, it has bedding, it has ID tags. It basically has like an entire office that has forms and everything. Bedding, blankets, leashes, collars. It doesn't have anything perishable in it. And then once we actually obtain them, they are owned by Animal Services. Animal Services is responsible for them to maintain them, register them, and keep them stocked as they use things.
And when they're not in use, where will they be?
I'm assuming they're going to be in Animal Services in the various areas.
They'll be in my driveway.
In your driveway?
So would you put one out, Kern, Fraser?
That's the idea, stash them.
That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
Just to stash them in the at-risk areas, yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then once we get these done, then I'm going to go back to Antelope Valley Kennel Club and talk to them about doing one, because their biggest concern initially was a majority of their club members are in L.A. County, but they still have several that are also in Kern County. And so we have, Animal Services has an agreement with surrounding counties where they can share the wealth, basically, during times of emergency, so...
Well, that's great. The thing about it is that for an emergency trigger, when something happens, you need it yesterday.
Exactly.
I mean, we don't need it 6 months from now. We need it right now.
Exactly.
So what other funding sources can you share with the group besides, you know, they're matching, they're giving us 10 grand. We've been able to generate 2,000. Any other grants that we could apply to that you know of? Or,
you know, I don't know that the AKC offers the grant because they're supplying the trailer,
right.
So that's an offset.
Okay.
Ultimately, I don't know if there's grant programs where we could actually say, here, donate to this cause, but certainly there's a lot of individuals and businesses that I've already talked to in town that were producing the letter for sponsorship letter and getting it out to them.
I really want to see this thing grow.
I do too.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. And I'm sure Nick, you would appreciate that.
I know Blake is the grant expert. Can you think of any other sources of funding that we could use that might expedite this a little bit more?
Well, I actually had a thought while we were talking. I wouldn't want to say it publicly right now in case I'm like way off base, but there is a phone call I can make tomorrow and see if they would at least be amenable to helping us with this to some degree.
Okay.
So.
Awesome.
Yeah, just try to think about anyone that might be a good candidate. So.
You know, it doesn't matter if it's $5, $500, $5,000. You know, whoever can do it. And the donations go direct to AKC. They've got a website set up, and I put forms in here. And it's really imperative people understand that when they send the funds in, they have to denote that it's for Kern County. Right. Otherwise, it goes in their general fund for national trailers.
The sooner the public service announcement gets written and broadcasted, the sooner other possible parties might step forward.
Oh, absolutely.
When do you think, they call it a PSA, when do you think that would happen?
We have the one that's ready to rock and roll right now. I've started talking to some of my media connections to see if we can get it on without them charging Animal Services money to promote it.
Okay.
And anybody that has a Facebook page or any of the other social media sites, you know, if they want a copy of it to incorporate into theirs, just they can contact me and I can send them the link or confirm that it works.
But you got an email for every radio station, TV station. You got those already.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're putting the press release out. Ultimately, you know, I would like to be able to get the parties together that are involved, somebody from, you know, Kern County, VOTC, Nick, et cetera. And do a press conference. You know,
when do you think a press conference would be logical to take place?
Well, I'm thinking we're probably going to have to do it early December because we're rolling into Thanksgiving right now.
Yeah, we are.
We've got the holidays. If we can put something together, I would think probably early December.
Okay.
For that.
Okay.
Question?
Liz?
Can you summarize, each trailer is 24 large? And AKC is
giving us 10 per trailer
for each.
Correct.
So that leaves 14
12,
each times 2.
Yeah, 24,000 is what we as a community need to raise.
No, 24 minus 10 is 14.
28,000.
No, it's 20. Or did I say 24? It's 22.
Okay.
Oh, that's $10,000. Don't mind me. You
okay.
Know. So, math is not my forte.
22 minus 10 is 12. Times 2 is 24.
Correct. Okay.
And you have $2,000 so far.
Correct.
So, all right.
And that's with pretty minimal effort. So
okay.
Once we really start hitting, so, you know, the heavyweights in town, I think it'll go relatively
so quickly. The goal is actually 24.
24 is our total.
And so far we have 2.
Correct.
But we're okay.
Right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay. Not a problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Continue on. Anybody from BC? No? Danny? No? Okay. And that'll conclude public presentations. We're going to move on to IFB then. Director's monthly report. Director Collins.
Good evening. Nick Collins, Director of Turkey Animal Services. I'm just going to expand on a few things that Janice touched on. I'm going to talk about, before I get to the director's report, an opportunity that I had over the past week. The AKC Reunite program, a little history on that. We have it's like a 28-foot disaster relief trailer currently. It hooks up to one of our trucks, and it's outfitted with about 45 cages on it. And it has two generators and air conditioning and heat, and it's sort of fully capable to be pulled out to the middle of nowhere, run on generated power, and care for animals for a period of time. When the Erskine fire hit Kern River Valley, and there were so many people that were displaced, our organization, Kern County Animal Services, when a natural disaster happens, and people are displaced from their homes, many times there is an evacuation, a recommended evacuation that happens. So people have to leave whatever they have and go to a Red Cross shelter to stay there until they can move back to their homes, hopefully until they move back to their homes. So the Red Cross and the Department of Human Services, when a disaster strikes, they scout locations for a temporary shelter for people to stay at until they move back to their homes. Well, when Erskine, it was on such a big magnitude, and animals mean so much to the community now, that became an issue for government, is you not only have to set up a shelter for the people that are displaced, but the animals that they own. And there's a whole bunch of research that says that people in high-stress situations do better with their animals. So it made sense to make sure that we had animal services wherever people were being evacuated from the Erskine fire. We cared for somewhere around 100 animals for a period of about 2 weeks during the Erskine response. And there were pop-up crates in parking lots. And our staff was sleeping under the stars in cots. We did the best we could to care for people's animals until they got a chance to go back home. And it was very difficult. It was very chaotic. And so when we got back, and the whole county kind of breathed a sigh of relief that Erskine was over, and there was a lot of conversation about what worked and what didn't, the fire department came to us, Animal Services, and said, how can we help through grant funding? Because the fire department receives grant funding from the state of California, from the federal government, for emergency response every other year. I think it's every year. And they usually use the funding for new fire trucks and, you know, generators. And it wasn't until recently they started thinking, hey, let's invest in something that can care for people's animals during a disaster. So they came to us and said, what do you need? And after our experience of caring for animals under the stars in crates, we thought it would be really nice if we had a trailer that could just care for animals, that has power, our staff doesn't have to be, and the animal owners don't have to be out in the elements to look after their animals. So we thought a trailer would be nice. And when I personally was doing research, finding out if those things exist, I actually came across AKC Reunite, this program that provides communities, and especially the welfare organizations that respond to disasters, those organizations and those communities, with these fully stocked trailers that have everything you would need to move into a disaster, care for animals for a period of time, and then bring it back home. So that's how we got the idea of asking the fire department to purchase that unit that we already have for us. Fast forward a few years later, and we had the opportunity and actually got the grant funding to purchase two of those trailers through the AKC Reunite program. So like Janice was saying, those trailers, the way that we had figured it, we live in such a large county. I believe we're the third largest county in the state of California by area.
Correct.
Thank you, Liz. there's a possibility and potential for disaster that affects a lot of rural communities. We always wanted to be able to have supplies that are ready, that can be mobilized at a moment's notice in the areas that are at highest risk. You know, the Kern River Valley, the mountain communities, and the Tehachapi area, East Kern, and something in Bakersfield. So we currently have two trailers. We have the large one that I just spoke of, and a smaller one that we use for smaller scale disasters. So we need two more. That's where this all kind of came in. Like Janice was saying, the AKC Reunite program, it's a grant that AKC kicks in $10,000, the organization and the community fundraises the other 12, and then the unit is purchased, it's given to the organization to manage and maintain, with the understanding that there will be mutual aid agreements with bordering counties, that if disaster strikes in those counties, we will be required to loan the equipment or even drive it out there ourselves. So, there are some papers in the back there. I also did a press release. I did record a PSA that we posted on our Facebook page about a month ago. I don't know if you, but if you scroll through our posts for the past 2 months, you'll probably find it. It really will benefit us. It'll benefit the community. Having the coach that we have now, the first time we got to use the disaster trailer we have now, and actually use it for a disaster, was the Paradise Fires, the Camp Fire, up north, the devastating wildfires, the large wildfire in the state of California's history. We brought our trailer up there. People up there were blown away. Where did you guys get this from? You know, lifesaving. And we used it, literally, myself and two other animal control officers who stayed up there for a week. We used it to transport animals all across the county. So that's just a long way of me saying that it's important for us to have supplies like this to respond to emergencies. Your donation to the AKC Reunite program, as long as you use that, there's a donation form in the back that already has it pre-filled out what organization it should go to, our organization. So super important. I'm glad that there's already some dollars in that fund to get us to $24,000, I think it's $22,000. Aside from that, I had an opportunity. I was invited to a Petco. It was sponsored by Petco. It was an animal welfare forum in San Diego. And the information that I got out of that I want to relay to you. So for those of you who don't know, we received a grant, a couple of grants actually, from the Petco Foundation. I'm saying this and there's not even a Petco representative here. It feels sort of hollow. But the Petco Foundation that grants money to animal welfare organizations, we have received two different grants from the Petco Foundation, one in the amount of $50,000 and the other in the amount of $225,000. Those dollars that Petco Foundation has given us, that we applied for, has saved thousands of lives. What I learned at the forum, one of the many things that I learned, is that when you go to Petco, and you buy whatever, and you go to the checkout, and it says, will you donate 2, 5, 10, 20, whatever, after receiving $275,000 in grants in the past 4 years, that $2 that you give, that's what comes to us. And I say that because there was a number that really was astounding to me, that Petco Foundation they grant out approximately $40 million a year to animal welfare organizations across the country. Largest animal welfare grant organization in the country. $40 million. They receive over $90 million in requests a year. They fund $40 million of it. 91% of that $40 million on average that they give out every year, 91% of it comes from the $2 that you give at the checkout. Huge percent. So I'm only saying that just for you to all spread the idea that if you go to Petco and they have that little thing that says donate, that money helps this community. Not just us, there's other organizations who have the potential to apply for grants through the Petco Foundation. So it really is impactful. And I know that I'll go to stores all the time and they'll say, will you donate such and such a dollar to whatever organization? And there's always a disconnect between what you're asking me for and the actual impact. Who's it impacting, you know? This, I can tell you, we are being impacted by those dollars that you donate. Like, we have been impacted and we will continue to be impacted. So that'll get off my high horse. Moving on to the director's report. I don't know if I brought this up at the last meeting, but we actually did make a slight change. It doesn't have anything to do with the director's report. To our adoption pricing. We have changed to more of a variable adoption pricing based on length of stay. So our current model now, and I don't remember the specifics of it, but if a dog's been here, if it's the first day it's available, it's a regular adoption fee, which I think is $85. And then as it gets into, after its first day of availability, up until like it's been here for 2 weeks, then it's, I think, $40. And don't quote me on the exact prices, but, and then after 2 weeks, if it's still here from like, you know, 2 weeks to 4 weeks, I think it's $20. And any animal that's been in our care over 28 days is free. So we have changed that. And it was a headache to try and figure out how to work with our shelter management software to calculate that automatically. But it's just an attempt to take a look at what we're charging for animals and where the cost is. We're caring for those animals for a period of time. Is it really all that important for us to charge a maximum fee in the first place? So, I don't think I brought that up in the last one, so I wanted to let everybody know that.
Can I ask something about that?
Yes.
And Jerry may be able to answer. Is that the kind of thing that needs to go to the board? Because they publish via ordinance all these fees and stuff. How does that work?
Yeah, so the board tells us what we can charge for an adoption. It's $85. We can't charge more than that. But we have promotions constantly.
Oh, yeah.
That's considered a promotion.
Yes.
But that's included in the municipal stuff.
Yes, there's also, I don't know if Jerry will be able to pull this off the top of her head, but there's also an ordinance, and I'm paraphrasing, that the director at his discretion can raise or lower the adoption fees to serve the best interest of the animal.
That's what I was thinking of. So that's
what I can't charge over $85.
Right.
That's what the, yeah.
So this reduction given length of time is covered by all that.
Yes.
Unless it's not, I'll wait until somebody tells me that.
No, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, so on to the director's report. Our rescue program, so 286 animals leave for rescue through rescue partners. Foster care program, one of them that is sitting right here, that has a 62-pound dog that she's fostering, that she's having an awesome time caring for.
Yeah, she's very sweet. Wants to be a lap dog.
Ringworm. No, I don't think this one has ringworm, though, does it?
No.
Huh? This isn't a ringworm dog.
Every time I get it,
no,
my desk.
Fosters are super important, by the way. I haven't told you that. If you don't know what foster is, I'm mainly talking to the students who aren't here every month. So we have a shelter that holds comfortably probably 325 animals, but we always want to continue to find homes for animals once we reach that and exceed that capacity. So our only way to keep animals beyond the minimum holding requirement when we reach that capacity is foster homes. People will come to us, sign up to be a foster, take care of animals, while they're recovering from illness or injury. Sometimes they're too young, or sometimes they just need some time to find a home. So come down and sign up to be a foster if you haven't considered.
And a sign up will give you extra credit.
Not a promise. Foster program in the month. Of October, so 169 new animals entered the foster care program. At the time that we printed this, 144 animals were currently in foster care. Trap neuter return program, feral cat release program, 9,363 cats since the program's inception in 2013. Our clinics were relatively successful, and it's usually this time of year that our clinics start to slow down a bit when the weather gets cold and the holidays hit. Adoptions did well. 453 animals were adopted in October. Year to date, 4,252 animals, 8 animals adopted from petco locations in October. We have really made an effort to attend more of Petco's adoption events on the weekends, on Saturdays, using our volunteers. Those have been very successful. Our volunteer program, again, if you're looking for volunteer hours for any reason whatsoever, Animal Services employs possibly about 120 volunteers, and we can always use more, especially if you like playing with puppies and kittens. That's not really what you do. Our calls for service in the field, we saw 350 calls for service in Northeast Bakersfield, 1,360 calls total, 23 dogs returned to their owners in the field in the month of October, 172 dogs were secured on property by officers. That will conclude the director's report. I can answer any questions. I do have one more thing, and I can answer any questions. We did, as of about, I want to say about a month ago, we implemented the use of administrative citations in Animal Services. And I can explain what that is or why that's important if anybody would like me to.
I would.
Yeah.
The easiest way to put it is, prior to about a month ago, our animal control officers, we have 14 animal control officers who cover the 8,200 or so square miles of Kern County. If they knocked on your door and you're in violation of the current state or local ordinance, they would issue you a criminal citation. And a citation book, a ticket book, just like if you got pulled over by a cop and they give you a ticket, same thing. They'd issue you a criminal citation. So if you didn't have a license for your pet, but you need a license for your dog, if you didn't have a vaccination currently for your pet, you could be given a ticket, a criminal ticket. Called criminal because the court system takes care of it. Once we issue you a ticket, you got to go to the courthouse and correct the citation or surrender your dog. So why that sort of is detrimental to us, we benefit if I write you a ticket and you go and you get the dog licensed to correct the ticket. Because we get the license out of it, and thereby become a little bit more responsible pet owner than you were yesterday. But where the administrative citation comes in is it's not criminal. It is administrative, which means that the fines that you come directly to the department and stay with the department instead of going to the judicial system, the court system. So there's a bunch of motivating factors here. One of them being that we seek revenue. And if there's one thing that all county agencies need right about now, it's a little bit more revenue to do some more things. So the administrative citations, absolutely they have the potential to increase revenue to the department. But what we're more interested in is, and we've done a test with our PEEP program in the past of issuing citations along with a notice to comply and telling the animal owner, we'll give you a period of time to correct by getting a license before we submit the citation to the court system. So this is sort of an extension of that, but allowing all of our officers to do that by issuing you an administrative citation. The way it works is you have 20 days to put your cited for it. And by corrected, most of them are going to be licensed and vaccinated. Once you correct it, I think there's a $20 administration fee, it's done. You don't have to go to the court system, you deal with us. Now, if you do not comply within 20 days, then there's a fine that's tacked on, and you can't deal with us for that fine anymore. There is an organization that you have to call and set up payments or after that 20 days that you have to correct it, you can no longer deal with us. Then it's another agency that you got to call and fix the problem. So that's why it's good for us to be able to say, license your pet, because after 20 days, there's not much we can do for you. And there's a lot more that goes into it. It's a lot more complicated than I just said. It involves potential for administrative hearings that might have to happen if somebody is to appeal one of the citations, which we've worked out to some extent. But the overall benefit that is, in addition to the potential for revenue, is our officers have the ability now, not that they didn't before, but they especially do now, to have a conversation with an animal. So we want to encourage a pet owner, especially in the areas where we see the most loose animals and the most animals coming into our facility from. We have the opportunity now to open up a conversation that, hey, here's an administrative citation that you have to correct through us. But the best way to do it is to get your dog altered. And by the way, the county has a spay and neuter program, and you can come down to a clinic and get a voucher to do that. The way to get your rabies vaccination, if you don't have a relationship with a veterinarian, is to go to, here's a flyer, this is where our clinics are. Every Wednesday you can come to a clinic and not only get your vaccination, but you get your spay and neuter voucher. It opens up the door for a conversation that's based on how to fix this ticket. And our officers, and it's been a process of getting them to see this administrative citation as a tool to reduce the amount of calls they're getting in those areas in the first place. And like I said, it's much more complicated than that, the benefits to us and what it's taken for the past 11 years to get this done. But ultimately, I think it's going to be a good tool for our officers to gain compliance and for us to really get into the areas that we see a lot of call volume to try to start reducing those calls. Like this is area.
Hold on, Susan, hold on, Clay. We're going to go here first, then we'll go to the...
Are you at the point of talking about the, it wasn't demographics, but the studies that you're doing on problem areas that you mentioned in the subcommittee?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about it. It's not really rocket science.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I'll phrase it like this. The shelter... Just the shelter aspect of things. We've for a long time now, some of you may know this if you've been on the commission for long enough, some of you may know this if you've been coming to these meetings for long enough. We didn't usually do that good of a job caring for the animals that actually came through our doors. We didn't do a real good job of getting them alive. We didn't do a real good job of caring for them when they got here. We didn't really do a real good job of seeing them as individual animals. We've done a lot to improve that over the past 7-8 years, right? So we feel like we're on a really good path towards fixing what happens behind our doors. What we've always known is that we're starting to transition to what's going on outside of our doors, and the way, and how do we fix the problems inside of our doors, and how can we adapt that to outside of the doors in the community. The way that we address a lot of those problems inside of our doors, the animals in our care, is that we started to figure out where should we apply resources to get the biggest bang for our buck. So what we mean by that is an example. When we're assigning staff at the shelter, we want to assign staff at times of highest intake. It doesn't make sense to have your staffing that's backloaded at a time when there's no animals coming in. You want to have their shifts and their schedules that are loaded on the days that you need them the most. Not only that, but we want to be open to a large extent when the largest amount of the community is available to come in and adopt animals. So we just want to apply resources where it makes the most sense. So again, that's what worked in the shelter. Now we're trying to adapt that to the community. How do we apply resources where resources are used the most to get the impact we're looking for? So what Debbie's talking about is we've been able to, and we're still working on really, what's called geocoding our data. So geocoding our data means looking at all of our field services activities, field services data, our officers' data, the calls that they go to and where they are, and what type of calls. And the geocoding process assigns each of those calls a latitude and a longitude. And then there's a process that puts it on a map. And you start to be able to get an idea of where your resources are needed in the community. Now, the data that's coming out of that, it wasn't really mind-blowing. We kind of all knew where resources are needed, but once you start looking at it on a piece of paper, on a screen, it just makes a lot of sense to you, And it makes you rethink how you're applying resources in it. When I say applying resources, I'm literally talking about human beings. Where are we assigning our officers, and why do we assign them? If the majority majority of our calls are in that area, shouldn't the majority of our officers be in that area? So just using data to figure out where we're applying resources and how to do that a little bit better to get a better impact on the community. Because we've been saying forever, which is not a lie, that we don't have enough staff to do everything we need to do. Well, we don't, and we're not going to probably ever, but maybe if we just used our staff in a little bit different way, we might be able to see a bit of an impact.
Thank you.
Thank you. Question. Nick, I think it's great on this administrative ticket. If it goes beyond the 20 days, what agency then kicks in? Which one is it?
The Phoenix Group.
It's what?
The Phoenix Group.
Oh, okay. So it's to their advantage to take care of the 20 days. And
yes.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah, I think after the 20 days, you get slapped with a $100 fine.
Right.
On top of having your license revoked.
Basically, you just say,
that's for first violation. If I come back to your house the next day and you still haven't got a license, I can slap you with another administrative citation for a $200 fine on top of the $100. It gets increasingly...
But the first 20 days is, you're saying, do the right thing, no penalty, just do the license, do the rabies shots, and get fixed.
Correct.
Okay. That's really good. I got a question for you on your outcomes. What do you attribute the increase of rescuing? You've got a 10% increase in dogs and a 12% increase in cats. Do you have more rescues that you've teamed up with at this point?
Are you looking at year-to-date or month-to-month?
Well, I'm looking at year-to-date right now.
I don't have anything to attribute to. Statistics always have a way of shaking out to about the same, if not a slight variation from year to year. So my answer is I would wait until January and then take a look at the numbers, and they're probably much more in line with.
Since you mentioned month-to-month, I did both of them. And I noticed on the dogs from last October to this October, there's an 85% increase in the rescue. So
month-to-month.
Month-to-month, yeah, month-over-month.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It varies so much from month to month. We might see an 85% decrease next month.
Might be, yeah.
But my guess is that at the end of the year, we will finish somewhere between 2,200 and 2,500 rescues, because it's been that way for a very long time.
Okay. Adoptions are really strong still. They're a little bit less than year-to-date last year, but they're still really strong, like 1,474 cats, 2,614. Did you raise the prices, didn't you, on the adoption fee? Well, you used to have some $5 and $10 deals from time to time, but I mean, what is it going right now to adopt?
So it is a varying price now.
Let's say today.
If the dog's been here for available for one day, it's $85. If the dog's available for between day 6 and day 14, it's $40. 14 through 28 is $20, and after 28 is free.
Really? It's a sliding scale. Okay, great. And sit in, too. Okay, beautiful. I did crunch the numbers, as far, and we are going to look at it here, end of the year, that's true. But we're hovering around 70% on the save rate, and you might say, well, you know, that's still a ways off from our 90% goal of no kill. And I do want to talk to you about that, but I'll tell you that it was, from this perspective, I've been a commissioner for 6 years now, and when I came in, we were saving about 40% of the animals, and now we're up to 70, and that's a 75% increase, which is huge. So it shows that, you know, a lot of innovative thinking, being efficient, more caring, more compassionate, and I guess also talk about the pet of the month, pet of the week with the supervisors. David Couch has started this. And I see the things on Facebook. I don't know if everybody's aware of the Pet of the Week deal, but he always does a good job. You're there. Did Dodger and Tater get adopted?
Yes.
Did they? Okay. He's got a pretty good record on the Pets of the Week.
Yeah, I think we're 100%.
100%? Okay.
Not exactly choosing face-biting dogs.
Yeah, so they're eight, adorable.
Yeah, they are. They're really cute.
We're 9 for 9 or something.
Yeah. Of course, it helped out when the supervisor paid the adoption fee yesterday. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
So, Okay, that's all the questions we have. Susan.
I had a question about your administrative. When your officer goes out for a call for service to make contact with, I call my neighbor, on my neighbor, whatever, and they go up and make contact, are they automatically having this conversation? Are they asking him, is your dog licensed? Is your dog up to date at shop? Let me see its records. To deal with that, are they automatically having this conversation with people?
So the question is are they asking if the dog has a license?
Yeah.
Most of the time, my officers already know that by the time they get there, because they have a computer in the truck, so they can research. But if I go up to your house, we can look up your address, and it'll tell us if there's any current licenses at your house.
So then are they automatically having this conversation when they make contact with people?
Yes. I mean, officers have discretion to have that conversation or not, but that's nothing different than 6 months ago or 30 days ago when we were issuing criminal citations. They would still have that conversation. So
then they're not going to necessarily hand out a citation if they don't want to or whatever?
I have never given any ultimatum that you have to issue a ticket every single time, because an officer has the discretion to do it or not. In the interest, the best interest of the animal is what I usually tell them to do. But if you're going to ask me if I've a non-documented directive to make sure that you're issuing citations. Yeah, there's been some direction in that area.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of unlicensed in my area.
Liz, you have a question?
On changing from the prior system to the administrative, and tying it into targeting areas, doesn't changing the citation system free officers up from having to go to court? Or
not necessarily.
Okay.
So, whereas before, the only time my officer would have to show up in court is if there was actually a hearing, if somebody contested a citation and pled not guilty. Why you would plead not guilty when you got a license and back citation, I don't know. So it was few and far between when you would have to testify in court. I think I was an officer for 7 years. I probably had to testify in court maybe 60 times. And those were usually for misdemeanor citations like animal cruelty or neglect or something like that. But they will still have to testify, or they still have the potential to testify. It'll just be at an administrative hearing as opposed to a judicial hearing.
Okay, so that really doesn't free up time.
I think it will. I don't think there's going to be. So the way the administrative, which is another benefit, the way the administrative citations work is in order to get a hearing, you have to satisfy the fine and the penalty, or the fine and the correction first before you grant a hearing. So, again, you're talking about somebody who has a dog that's unlicensed. At most, you're talking about a $60 license and a $10 rabies vaccination. Potentially, if the dog's fixed, you're talking about a $15 license and a $10 vaccination, $25. So then you're telling somebody, if you pay at most $70, you're done with this, plus a $20 administrative fee, I think. Or you can contest it, and you'll have to pay $170 now and then go to a hearing and potentially. And all along, it's for a license that you either did or did not have. So my guess is that the amount of hearings, and it is a guess, by the way, is that the amount of hearings and appeals that we see are going to be few and far between. Although I will say that there's only four violations that we will currently allow our officers to cite for administratively, and that is failure to have a current dog license, failure to have a current rabies vaccination, leash law violation, and a nuisance complaint, which is barking. So, again, I was to guess the overwhelming majority of administrative citations are going to be license and vaccination. Those are correctable citations. The minority of those are going to be leash law violations and nuisance complaints. So, Debbie's looking at me. If there are hearings, and Debbie and I are looking at each other, Debbie's going to be our hearing official as we work this process out. But my guess is that the citations that probably will go to appeal are the non-correctable citations, the leash law violations and the nuisance complaints. And those are the ones that my officer will probably have to testify for. So that's a long way of saying they still have to testify, But I still think it'll be less.
But we think that it will go down.
Yes.
With getting back to your how you use resources. One other comment I'd like to make, particularly for those who haven't been around as long as people like me. Director Cullen is not a chest-pounding person. And when he talked about the Erskine Fire, Animal Services was up there practically before the Red Cross even knew there was a fire. And that year, Director Cullen and Animal Services got the Red Cross Hero of the Year award for their work, right?
Yeah.
Thanks. But you didn't want to say that, did you?
No. We did not. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, thank you, Liz.
You hid that from us.
Such a cry all campaign.
That's great.
I know.
They called the Red Cross Real Hero Award. Yeah. It was for the entire
time.
Excellent. Okay.
You
I have a question, but I don't know if this is appropriate. But
talk about name tags?
The leash law thing?
Yeah.
So, as far as enforcement of that, how is that enforced? The reason I ask the question, there's a gentleman in my neighborhood who has a female Doberman, and when he walks that dog, he just lets it run. And he'll follow it around, but anyway, it's like, now if I wanted to say something, call an animal control officer, by the time they get out there, he's already back at his house. There's nothing I can do. Do you have any advice for me, Mr. Cullen?
Well, Mr. Literal. So to answer your question, the way it's enforced is the first violation, and I'm going to talk criminally, just because I have very little experience on an administrative citation or a leash law violation, but the way the ordinance is structured is the leash law violation is an infraction, first time. An infraction has to be witnessed by a law enforcement official in order to have a citation issue. So unfortunately, you can see it all you want, but until you sign up to be an animal control officer, which by the way, we just filled a few positions, so you missed your opportunity. an officer has to witness the violation in order to issue a citation. But in my experience as an officer and as a director, and this is it's not the best answer in the world, but if it's happening enough and the animal owner is that irresponsible and the reporting party is consistent, we'll catch them eventually. And then at that point, when an officer responds and sees the dog off property, a lot of times it's up to the officer whether or not they're going to impound the dog. Or are they going to issue a citation and get the dog back? And this is sort of one of those turning points for our department, because in years past, it was categorically take the dog. And we're trying to take an approach that's a little bit more progressive. We're trying to be a little bit more progressive and approach it to drill down and find out why is this person letting their dog roam? Is it, if it's intentional, it might be such that the officer uses discretion to impound the dog, whether the person is standing there or not. But if it's just somebody who doesn't have the property to maintain the animal, the awareness of why they need to maintain their animal in a better way, we might take those opportunities to approach it educationally than enforcement-wise. I hope that kind of makes sense.
Yep. Thank you.
Nice. Skip, Mr. Little.
I skipped over the third row. Does the third row have any questions on anything that the director says?
No.
Okay. What Director Cullen said about Petco, about the money that, like, if they go up and say, hey, would you like to donate a couple of dollars? Because we've got a fundraiser that I always do. Or will you round up the change and give it to our group? Yes, I always do that because of what they do for our county. Now, and I buy all my pet food at Petco, and I don't care if it's a couple bucks more than what Walmart would charge. I don't care, because I know they're doing great work with that money. Walmart's not giving us any grants, right? So I agree with him 100%. I always give them a couple extra bucks just because I know that I'm helping out in some small way. So my follow-up question is 3 years and 11 months into a five-year program that we want to go no-kill, and we've made some good progress. And, you know, that's typically what I look at every month is the no-kill goal of saving 90%. We're 70 or so right now. You said that the money that you got from HEPCO has saved thousands of lives. I know the PETCO, from what I've been told, is going to continue on with the grant this coming year. Is there a certain piece of equipment that you would earmark that for, or a certain program that you would like to institute that might help us achieve that goal before next December that you could use that money for? What would you do with it?
Which money are you talking about?
I'm talking about the money that PETCO is probably going to contribute on grant money that you might get. Have you got a program that you'd like to start up or a piece of equipment that you'd like to get that we don't have?
Yeah.
So how can we help?
This is going to seem like I'm not answering your question, but I promise you I'm answering your question. So when we approached the board, when I approached the board in 2015, and they said, hey, can we turn the county sheltering system into no-kill? We were saving 55% of our intake at the time. What we've come to realize, really over the past 3.5 years, is that the definition of no-kill is much more complicated than we could have ever considered 3.5 years ago. Because if let's say tomorrow I can snap my fingers and we're saving 90% of the animals that come to the county shelters, but if there is, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of animals that are dying in the community or at another shelter or in a rural community shelter, are we really a no-kill community? So when you ask me what kind of programs would we institute to make us achieve that goal by next December, that's a very difficult question. Because my awareness and my thoughts on no-kill have evolved. Because I feel like a dog is a dog and a cat is a cat. It doesn't matter what shelter it goes into. It doesn't matter where it's suffering. If it's suffering in my shelter at the hands of a youth technician, or if it's suffering in someone's backyard, what's the difference? So what we would be looking at if we were to approach PETCO with another grant proposal, which we will, is no longer programs in the shelter. You know, we're looking at programs that impact the animals that have not come to our facility. The animals that are being hopefully cared for in the community. Because I think what we all want is sustainment. We don't just want to achieve a 90% goal. We want to achieve the bigger idea, which is a more compassionate, more progressive, more, you know, animal welfare-minded community. And that is a much more complicated problem than saving 90% of animals that come through our shelters. I've always said to people that if you want to come to me and have a conversation and ask me about how many animals my staff euthanized last year and how do we fix that, if you think that's the problem, I'm going to give you and let you know that the problem is way more complicated and more difficult to solve than just that. You know, the problem is changing an entire community and how they perceive the dog that's in their backyard. How do you change that? And I'm being very candid right now. If you were to ask me if I feel that writing somebody a ticket is going to fix that, I would tell you no. Taking the time and the effort, which is hard, to teach them why they need to care for their animal better and why their animal matters, and just get them to treat their animal slightly better today than they did yesterday on grand scale. That's what we face. And it's much more complicated than fixing the foster program or a kitten nursery or, you know, getting ringworm dogs out into foster homes. Those are problems as well, but the big thing is... And by the way, I will say, this is not a problem that is unique to Kern County. Listen, right. I just got out of a forum with directors and CEOs of agencies just like ours all across the nation, and they all face the same problem that we do. All of them. How do we change how the community perceives their members?
And it isn't a question of urban versus rural versus large versus small. This is across the board. Doesn't matter.
Well, we on the commission have always agreed that education is really the number one thing that has to happen, right, Janice?
Absolutely.
Has to happen. We've always we've all agreed on that. Maybe an educational program. I don't know. But, it's not just the numbers. I know it's how you care about your animals. Now, to me, I think the compassion level. I mean, there's a lot of bad things that happen, granted, but there's also a lot of great things that happen. I mean, how many rescuers have only been with us in this area in the last, let's say, the last 2 years? How many? And this is a short group here, but there's a number of new people that have come on the scene in the last couple of years. We hear about a lot of touching stories of animals that have been helped. One of my favorite videos is the dodos. Everybody see those? I love those. I watch every one that I can watch because they're all good. They all make me feel good that someone has stopped to help an animal. I personally feel that the awareness is creeping up. I really do. Of course, I'm an optimist, but that's how I feel. So
I have a quick question for Nick. I know your staffing is terribly limited. Do you have any programs going out to the schools? Any officers doing like a humane education class? I don't know if you've ever had that. I think you did.
Nothing consistent. I mean, we participated in the Halt Rescue's educational program.
Pause
program. It's, I don't know, maybe Danny can expand on it, but I think it's been inconsistent whether they're being had on a regular basis or not, or at least whether we're being involved in them on a regular basis. We've been invited on a number of occasions to come out to schools and talk about responsible pet ownership and stuff like that, but there's been no consistent approach. I know that at one point, goodness, years ago, I sent out a letter to a lot of the schools in the area asking if they would consider giving us just some time to talk about responsible pet ownership. And it gets complicated because then you got to start talking about the education system and the requirements that they have to pass on curriculum to students and what they can allot time for. And it gets very difficult when you start asking them to commit time to something that they're not necessarily measured by.
It's just that the kids can bring that information home.
Absolutely.
And you used to do something with putting something in their backpacks?
I mean, we still do. We're doing a spay neuter clinic in Mojave in December, which has already been booked. And we got a hold of Supervisor Scrivener's office. They got a hold of the schools. They did backpack drops. And by the time that day ended, we were full. Because the kids come home and they yell and scream at their parents until we get our dog fixed.
Okay. I was just curious.
Question. Well, you.
I do agree with Nick on, the shelter is not necessarily the problem. The fact that they're putting down dogs and being involved in rescue and mostly street rescue and fostering and stuff, there is a big problem out in the county with stray dogs. Every morning I see three of them running down my alley, same dog, not sure where they live, haven't found out where they live yet, but I mean, it's big, and I think when he's talking about education, which I do am a big believer in education, but you're talking also about changing a mindset of people that are in the community and how they believe, and sometimes the culture, and not necessarily culture and the fact that race related, but culture and the fact like the dog fighting ring. You know, and that could be any race involved with that. You're talking about people that just don't see animals the same way we do.
Sure.
Regardless of race, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's a bigger job ahead than I think most people realize. You know, and I know I've been talking to a lot of people too when I'm out there, but I mean that's a much bigger job for his shelter staff or his animal control or anybody. So, yeah. I mean, it's really going to take people that really have some charm and knowledge, you know, to really get out there and really get boots on the ground.
Yeah.
That's how you, you know, because most of these people, they're not on Facebook. They're not necessarily looking at the internet and this kind of stuff. It's going to be boots on the ground, and that's what needs to happen in order to start making a change in the neighborhoods.
You're going to start seeing some things. Maybe you'll see them, because I don't know if I'll do press releases on them or not, but you may start seeing some changes to our department, especially in our field services unit, over the coming year. Not only in their appearance, your perception of them, but how they're assigned and what their duties are every day. And this is all just trying to evolve animal control. You know, we
just to clarify, when I say boots on the ground, I don't necessarily just mean animal control officers. I mean community people that are involved in this area.
Please did you. Let's ask a question before we move on.
Yeah, if I can remember what that.
Oh,
couple of things. Liz Keough, 93305 5th District Supervisor. Those who are not familiar with or have forgotten what was in the Citygate report 15 years ago, granted it's, you know, two volumes and 800 pages or something, it might be instructive to look at it, because some of the stuff you're talking about right now, they mentioned 15 years ago, no?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Number two, I get tired of hearing about how we have to educate folks. And the example I have given for years, and you alluded to it a little bit, is that when Supervisor Perez announced she would have spay-neuter clinics in 2013, and we distributed the flyers through the school kids who brought them home, and I'm the one that kind of coordinated and called people back because I'm bilingual, so I could, you know, make appointments and all that crap. And I called them not between 8 and 5, because that's not when they're home, they're working. I called them in the evening and on weekends. In the first 10 days that those kids got the flyers, and it was a President's Day weekend, we delivered them on a Friday, the kids got them on Tuesday. From Tuesday till the next Friday, there were 1,200 calls placed to the hotline. There were over 150 emails. We did not have to educate the populace of Lamont about why they should spay or neuter their pet. They knew that. What was the problem?
Money. Access.
Ability and money.
Thank you. So when I hear about educating these, you know, low income, low educational level people, I just want to scream. It is not where it's at. They know. Their neighbors know. One of the things that I have pushed for as long as you've known me, Cullen, and I will keep pushing it, and when we're talking about communities, particularly in metropolitan Bakersfield, where one side of the street is county and one side of the street is city, or you have a little county pocket surrounded by city, is that the people who sit on the Board of Supervisors, the people who sit on the City Council, the appointed bureaucrats who sit there, need to understand we are talking community. We are not talking City of Bakersfield or County of Kern or City of Delano or City of Ridgecrest or whatever. And I think, and you people who know me, I've been yapping about this for years, we need a Metropolitan Bakersfield Animal Control Agency, a joint powers authority, and you and I have had differences about this, so that's okay. But if we want to talk about community no-kill, we cannot compartmentalize it the way we do. And by the way, all kinds of private rescues and shelters
go around telling you how they have 92% save rates, live release rates, whatever label you want. Of course they do. And that's because 90% of the people that we see in of the animals we see in the street can't even get into those places because they're put pit bulls, and the SPCA does not take pit bulls, and the so-and-so does not take Chihuahuas, and somebody else doesn't take Rhodesian Ridgebacks or whatever. So all this stuff is interesting on a theoretical basis. Where it comes down to rubber meeting road is city council, board of supervisors, state legislature, and money. Any 10 cents worth of a flyer to tell somebody they ought to spay and neuter their female dog and male dog or cat or whatever, to me, is wasted. Give that dime to the person. And if enough people give enough dimes to that person, they can pay for the spaying and neutering that they already know they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. Okay. We agree on most things. We're not going to agree on everything. I mean, I agree on the joint powers thing. I do. Education is still going to be a component. And they don't know about, a lot of times they don't know about these programs. And we're not going to agree on everything. That's just the way it is. But we're getting there. We're getting there. So, no more questions. So, what I need is a motion to receive a file this report, please.
I make a motion.
I second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Thank you. Moving on to ordinance change subcommittee.
Did White
Come?
10.
White, you're next. Ordinance change.
Ordinance change subcommittee is next.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Go for it.
Hi.
I'd love to go.
Stay up there. I thought you were going to do that one. The longest directed report, history of directed report.
So ordinance subcommittee, we made some progress today. I think I said this last meeting that what we've been discussing amongst the subcommittee for the past four meetings maybe, has been breeder's permits, or the breeder's permit. So it's just been a slow process where sort of got a meatus kind of form and picking things out, fine-tuning wording, and getting it to where what we said today was getting to a point where neither side is, and there are sides, neither side is entirely happy with what has come out or what will come. And that usually means you found a pretty good middle ground. So where we are right now is we've decided today that the subcommittee will meet in December, regardless of what the commission decides to do as far as December is concerned, so that we can hopefully have the final piece of this finished in December, which is the language of the breeder's permit. And then if all goes well, then I got to send out an email asking all of the subcommittee members to please make sure that you show up at that meeting. It's important. And then we should be able to wrap up.
We're shooting for having something to Jerry by next year? Early.
Let's hope so.
And then you have a month.
I have a month? Oh, well.
Yeah. So much for that.
Well, okay. What are the questions from the commissioners on the subcommittee?
Any questions?
Anything else? Okay. Questions from the audience. Row one on the subcommittee. Two? Three? Nobody else? Okay. Is there anything to receive and file? Is there a report or anything? Okay, then we'll skip that part then. Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Blake Smith.
Now it's my turn.
Okay. It's your turn, finally.
Sorry, I was so anxious.
I am Blake Smith. I am a business manager, and I get to do spay-neuter report. For those of you who haven't been here before, for the last 5 or so years, the County Board of Supervisors have given us $250,000 a year to do low-income spay-neuter, low-cost spay-neuter, and it's been quite successful, I think. And it's, you know, when they're talking about education and services, just wrap your head around this. We've paid out more than $1 million to county residents in low income spay neuter. So we're noticing that, you know, I'm hoping that we're noticing that it's doing some good. So it's pretty basic at this point in the year. We're right on track with the $250,000. That little budgeted number at the top, that's pulled out of the sky. So it'll change three times before the end of the year, maybe four. But we're on track. Where we need to be with it. For where we are in the year, we've got a balance of 68%, almost 67%, and we're a third of the way through the year. And we always spend more at the end of the year, plus there's a lag time between when the surgery comes and when we get the bill, so that's all going to wash out. And we don't have anything when you get down to the second part, vouchers redeemed surgeries, and you get the Valley Vet and Vet Coach. We don't have anything there, but our Mojave clinic's going to change that. There will be some money coming out of there. Our redemption rate is pretty consistent. We're running anywhere from 84 to 85% for the vouchers. The low-income vouchers. The Save the Pity voucher redemption rate is 72%, and I'm 100% confident the difference between those two is that they pay $20 for the low-income voucher, and they pay nothing for the Save the Pity. So the ones where I've put some skin in the game have a tendency to be utilized more. We also got $7,500 from the state of California FIBNAC, and it was the intent to go out to TAP with that, and we haven't done much with that yet, but the year is still young. And we also got I love this number, $45,949 for the California State Department of Food and Agriculture, and that is all that money is going into the Save the Pities program, and we're on track with that too. We did some advertising. I had $349 left, and the advertising rep came by and said, "You want to do some more advertising?" And I said, "Yeah, for $349." And she hooked me up, so we're good. So that's it. Any questions about spay neuter?
Do we have any questions up here?
I'm good.
Okay. Any questions, Terry?
Yeah, Terry Kahn, 93561. I agree that if people have put a little bit of something in, they're more likely to actually go through and get it. Is there any way we can change the Save the Pities to be from zero to maybe like $5 or $10?
I was thinking that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe 20, okay. $20 can be difficult in a lot of households, but $10, is there a way to change the program?
I kind of wrote it up in the grant the way it is, so I don't like changing the program mid-grant year, so that's something that we could surely discuss if we write another grant for next year, which, at the rate we're going, I'm hoping we will. But, we can certainly look at that and see. Our attitude was, the most likely euthanized dog in a shelter is a pit bull, right, or a pit mix. And because there's no income verification on it, there is no nothing. It's take this, fix your dog. Okay? And so sometimes we push it on people, where the others we don't really push it on them, they pay for it. So I think that's some of it. So I don't know how many we push on people that they actually use that they wouldn't have used in the first place. Where most people that come to get a voucher, they want a voucher. Mm-hmm. And 15% of them just don't get around to utilizing them. So I don't know. It's a discussion. I'll discuss anything. What can I say?
So you're getting about an 85% redemption rate, is what you're saying?
Well, we get an 85% redemption rate where there's a copay, and we get about a 70 to 70. It's currently 72% redemption rate where there is no copay.
Okay.
where we just give you the voucher. Here.
I agree, though. I think it comes down to more with the probably because the people who are paying for the vouchers are out there looking for the vouchers.
Yeah.
Yes.
More so than the people with the pitbulls.
And they've got a vested interest to use it, since they've already, it's a copay.
Yes.
And Terry has another question.
One more question about verification. So, say the fitties, there's no income verification at all.
No, I don't care if you drive a Mercedes when you come up and get it. They, okay. We haven't had to deal with that, but we don't care. Fix your dog.
What about the one that they buy in for $20? Is there a low
income program? That is a low income program, and it's we want some income verification. We're not eligibility workers, so I'm not real fanatic about it. But it's 200% of poverty level. And I just go, every year I go online to the poverty level and I create a grid that's multiplied by two. We did that because we had a 22-year-old young man come by who made $19,000 a year and he didn't qualify for the voucher. And I thought, this is crazy. Yeah. And so I doubled it.
Good for you.
So,
I think you were right in doing that.
But Blake, you also, if another agency like PG&E or Medi-Cal or TANF has already, if that person is on one of those programs, you don't bother with all that 200% of the federal income.
Well, it's real easy because if they come in with a Medi-Cal card or they, you know, that's we don't bother. And there's a whole bunch of these little programs that if they come in with evidence of those, we just do it. Every once in a while, we run into one where we look at it and go, "You need to verify."
The way I explain it to people is that you all don't want to spend your time going through income verification if somebody else has already bothered to do that for you.
So you're on CalFresh, you're on Medi-Cal, you're on Healthy Families, whatever they call all these things nowadays, because it changes so fast, that you're on one of those things, you're eligible. Just bring it in and show it. And then get your doctorate.
Can I make one quick comment about the 20 versus 10 versus 5 versus 0? When we did the Lamont clinics, it was a $10 copay. And I explained that to people. I had a list of people and their phone numbers and their appointment times for all of the clinics. And Senora Sanchez didn't show up with her two dogs, so I called her. And I said, "Hi, remember me?" And we had them not pay in advance. We had them pay at the door, as it were. And what happened was the day before rent was due, or the PG&E bill was due, mm-hmm. or her husband, who took the only car they had in the household, was called by his crew leader at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we had all these clinics on Sunday, by the way. So $10 can be, to a certain group of people, you might as well charge them $500. Now, the other real quick thing is Kern Humane Society also provides a $20 voucher to people. It's a little orange thing. It says it's worth $20 against the cost of the spay. I tell people this looks like an orange piece of paper. It's a $20 bill. And they use that to pay whoever, and then Blake charges Kern Humane the $20 when the coupon comes back. So we do have a way to get that down to zero for county residents. And I'm not going to bore you with my discussion about out-county residents because I spent a good amount of time with a lady in Lamont. 3 visits from Lamont to wherever. We need to look at Lamont again, Colin.
Okay, Ms. Q.
Okay.
Any other questions, Danny? Janice? Anybody? What you said about the vouchers, right? I got a couple of years ago, and it is like a $20 bill, and I used it. I redeemed it, and it did help out. So, Kern Humane, that's where you get them. I need a motion to receive and file this report.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
All in favor, aye. Opposed, no. Thank you very much, Blake.
And I'm going to slip out.
Okay. Commissioner announcements or reports. I'm just going to read this. On their own initiative, commissioners may make an announcement or a report on their own activities. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff, or take action to have staff place a matter of business on a future agenda. Any commissioner announcements?
The only thing I have is in my California animal disaster team hat. We have just gained access, been given a room bigger than this with an upstairs to store our equipment and have an animal shelter if we need be indoors, and it's right next to where the Red Cross sets up in Tehachapi.
So,
that's great.
Yes,
oh,
excellent.
Wow.
Their position really close by.
Yeah.
What I'd like to see on the next old business agenda is the AKC Reunite report. I think I was supposed to have it on this month, and we didn't do it. So next month,
but yes,
if we can do it, the next meeting that we have, that is, would be great. I'm going to move on. I didn't have any other announcements besides that. Old business, staff referrals?
None.
Anything? Zero. Okay. New business? I need to take just a moment. Okay. New business, election of new chairperson and vice chairperson. As you may know, we have a vacancy of the chairperson. And there was some discussion since we do have a quorum here, a legal quorum. We don't have everybody here tonight because of other personal reasons. But we do represent the majority of the commission. And we've decided that we're going to go ahead and go through with the election of chairperson and and vice chairman tonight. So I'm taking any nominations for chairperson or chairman.
I nominate Commissioner Blackburn to take over the chairperson spot position.
I have a second nomination.
Okay, no other nominations? Okay. Seeing none.
By yourself.
I'll stay on this one. So we have a nomination, and I guess we have a second. So all in favor of this person being the new chairman?
Aye.
Opposed, no? Okay. The new chairman has just been approved. Vice chairperson.
I would actually like to elect...
I
nominate Commissioner
Geary. I would too, actually. So we have a nomination and a second for David Geary to be the vice chairperson.
Nay.
Sorry, you don't get a vote on this one. So all in favor of that, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? No. So we now have a new chairperson and a new vice chair. So congratulations to those people. Right.
You guys got it wrong. You're supposed to nominate the people who didn't show up.
We did discuss that.
It's more fun to watch them squirt, though.
Okay, also, we're going to move on to item number two, discussion of the commission going dark in December. Now, it's been our MO the last 4 years that I can think of that we are dark in December. I recommend that we're dark in December. I'd like to hear from the other commissioners.
I think we're pretty light so far on agenda, so I would like to see us go dark.
Okay. So, do we need to vote on that, or can we just say we need to vote on it?
You're not going to miss anything. You have to be here every month, you know.
Yeah.
I make a motion to go dark in December.
Okay. All in favor, aye. Opposed, no. Okay, we're dark in December, everybody.
Well, they only actually have to meet once a year.
January is going to be packed.
It is.
So the next meeting, since that is the case, would be not 15th. December 18th, but it would be
January 15th.
January 15th. And I want to thank everybody for all the work they've done this year, all the time they've spent here, the students coming in, the rescue groups, everybody coming in, devoting their time.
We've come a long way in the past year, but we've come a long way in the past, say, 3 or 4 or 5 years, a lot. So I want to thank everybody for their continued service to the animals. Susan, do you have a question?
Yeah, I had one last thing before we adjourned because I didn't, I'm not sure what I'm going to bring it up. But my question is because apparently there's supposed to be a board supervisor person here that's never here, okay?
I know. I've already addressed that today.
Okay. Well, my question is, I mean, who determines who that person is? And
the chairman of the board of supervisors.
The board of supervisors?
Yeah. And I already had that conversation this afternoon.
Okay, so are we going to start seeing
somebody
here?
They're going to let me know.
Or pick another one.
What I told them, I said, you know, if they can't make it every month, every quarter would be appreciated. There are questions that we'd like to bounce off of them. That's exactly what I told them.
And I also think it's important for the board of supervisors, at least a representative, to hear firsthand things.
It's a two-way street on that, and I agree with you 100%. But had the conversation. It's in the works. They're going to come back to me. It's going to happen. I just don't know who it's going to be yet. So.
Okay. Right, and don't they appoint an alternate as well?
Yeah.
There is an alternate.
There is an alternate too.
Yes.
There's the
appointment
by the board and the alternate.
That's right.
So it's not just the appointee.
It's not just the one. It's the alternate also.
Right.
Okay. All right. So what I need, since we're at the end of the meeting here, I need a motion to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. See you guys next year. Great meeting.
Let me quick.